All right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. That's right, decisions. That's what it's all about these days. And you got to start making some decisions that will make a difference for people in the entire world. And that's sort of what the character of this show is going to be today. Just last week, there was a demonstration and a march in various parts of South L.A., and it was a piece that was actually extremely significant, extremely moving. It was a beginning force for an actual revolution came on the scene at that time. And in Revolution newspaper on the website, revcom.us, you can read this whole thing. But it begins with a beginning force for an actual revolution came on the scene, the specter of revolution and a real beginning. On Saturday, June 8th in South Central Los Angeles, something new appeared on the scene, the beginnings of a movement for an actual revolution. People have never seen anything like this. The specter of an organized force growing was raised in the discipline, defiance, and joy of the revolutionary cohort marching with chants that put forth the goal of revolution for the emancipation of humanity. And joining us to talk about that today are two of the people who were involved in that. To my left is Michelle Chai, who is from the Revolution Club, and she's also a people know her. If you listen to the show regularly, you know she's been on the show quite a few times. And to my right is Lenny Wolf, who is a fighter for the communism of Bob Avakian and a revolutionary communist for a long time, brother. We were both little kids when that happened. And welcome to the show, both of you.
Okay? Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
And I wanted to open this up with, you know, with something from BA to kind of set a character for, you know, everything that happened there, the understanding of it, but also just putting people in the midst of what this was all about. So let's open up with this. Teddy, let's hit that first piece, okay?
And many people say, we need religion to be able to endure, to survive, to keep from going crazy, to continue to struggle on, even to have some moments of joy and glimmers of hope in a world full of so much cruelty and brutality, heartbreak and heartlessness. But what if the world doesn't have to be this way? What if we could live in a world where never again would a parent have to fear for the life of their child just because of the color of their skin? What if we lived in a world where never again would that soul-wrenching experience that never leaves of having to bury your own child whose life was stolen by a brutal thug with a gun and the backing of the powers that be? What if being black no longer meant living in a white supremacist society that continually assaults you in your very being and very sense of worth, constantly subjects you to terror, openly or in more subtle ways, and forces you to face the constant danger that you or your children will have your life snuffed out at any moment for doing nothing but being? What if your humanity really mattered and were considered precious? What if this were true of all people of color and of immigrants? What, in fact, if all people were just people of different colors, and there were no distinctions and discrimination and persecution and brutality based on what nationality or race you were? What if there were no such thing as immigrants? What if we all lived in a world community of human beings without borders and tanks and guns and planes to enforce them? What if women could walk down the street and look every man they encounter straight in the eye and fear nothing and not be made to feel. And not be made to feel that you're on display and to be evaluated by how you sexually titillate them. What if no more women were ever again battered, raped, assaulted, denied the right to control their own bodies? What if people who were different in their sexual orientation or just in the way they went through life, instead of being discriminated against and bullied, were valued for their difference? If that were seen as part of the great diversity of humanity. What if there were no more one part of society exploiting the others, and those exploited had no choice but to enrich them in order to be able to live themselves, working their whole life away under conditions of this ruthless exploitation? What if we didn't have to live in a lopsided world where a small number in a small number of countries have accumulate tremendous wealth by exploiting the great majority, and the conditions of the great majority are desperate? Look at the world. Look at the phenomenon of Ebola. There's been a lot of concern about Ebola, rightly so, but way too much hysterical fear about whether a few people here might get Ebola, and not nearly enough concern about what is happening to the people in Africa. What if there were no more wars for domination and plunder? What if there were whole different relations among people, valuing each other's humanity? What if there were different relations to the environment, protecting it and providing for future generations instead of despoiling and ruining it? What if we could have a whole different outlook on life and on the future instead of one of dread and one of desperately striving just to make it? Now, to paraphrase John Lennon's song, Imagine, you may say I'm a dreamer, but this is not just a dream. It is something for which there is a definite basis in reality, and it is up to us, together with people throughout the world, to make it a reality.
All right, welcome back. That was Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. You know, I'm listening to that, and every time I hear it, it gets heavier and heavier. Every time I hear it, and especially as we look at what's happening in the world today, you know, and the necessity for that kind of thinking, but for that to be out there for people to understand, because it has everything to do with whether or not, and I don't think this is hyperbole, but whether or not that the planet is going to survive, literally. And the people are going to be able to live in any fashion of real humanity. And I wanted to ask you guys, one, to just comment on that in the very beginning, because that was a statement that, and I'd ask you first, I guess, and then Michelle, you first, whichever one of you wants to go. All right, Michelle.
Well, I just think that is exactly what you're saying. You know, in a time when the world is, you know, such a nightmare, and even how he begins, right? Where do people look to find their hope, right? And we're in a world of cruelty and brutality, you know, where people are, you know, every day in many different ways degraded, right? Whether it is because you're a woman and you're walking down the street, or you're just trying to go out and have fun with your friends, and then, you know, and you get treated as a sexual object, you know, or whether you're Black or Latino walking down the streets of your neighborhood just hanging out with your friends, you know, that the police can just come and brutalize you, incarcerate you, and even kill you, you know? That nobody else is talking about that world that he's painting a picture of, right? And even the way that he ends it, right? It's not just a dream, but there actually is a basis in reality to make that real. And we're going to get more into through the whole show today on the question of hope, you know, because people do need hope in a time like this, but hope on a scientific basis, right? The fact that the world is a horror, it does not have to be this way. We don't have to accept all the cruelty and brutality that is in the world right now. And we can actually go to work on transforming that right now and getting to the point when we can actually overthrow the system that actually puts us in the situation, right? People hearing all over the world. So that's, and it's just hearing it again, and, you know, it's just really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On one level, I don't have much to add to that. But on another level, I did want to say that in your introduction, you said I was an advocate for Bob Avakian's New Communism. And I would just add, and I, if you listen to that full dialogue out of which that is an excerpt, that's Bob Avakian's dialogue with Cornel West at Riverside Church in New York over revolution and religion, you'll see why I'm an advocate for the new communism, and I hope you'll see why you should be too, which is what I feel very, very strongly. And that is the other thing is, yes, Bob Avakian's the leader of the revolution in this country, but he's more than that. He is the architect of a whole new communism that people need to get into and need to understand. And exactly what Michelle said, it is hope. It is a very expansive, it's a more expansive vision of a communist world. Precisely because it's more scientific, it's hope on a solid scientific foundation. A lot of people see those two things as opposites, but it's a unity of opposites. And it, precisely what he goes on to say after laying out that vision and laying out the fact that it's a responsibility of all of us to bring that into being is that you need science. You have to do the work with science to bring that world into being, to do the, to make the analysis, to develop the ways that people can actually go forward in a very complex world to make revolution, which is the only choice, and brings us back to that.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that, that really struck me is that the character of the march itself and, you know, the fact that so many people, I mean, there was actually a period there when you looked at it and there was, you know, there was a sharp thing of the people that were associated with the Revolution Club. They were marching in formation. They were, you know, really bringing something new into the world and into people's, you know, what people are thinking about in a certain sense. And it's sort of, it, it also at the same time, it, I want people to understand what it meant to actually be bringing this into these neighborhoods, you know, because it was pretty stunning. I mean, I hooked up with it at Florence and Normandy, you know, and, but you guys had a whole other, you had a whole other experience from the very beginning and seeing what difference it made to people. And damn it, I'll tell you, because so many people, I know way too many people these days who are just, look, they would love to see something like this, but they also feel like there's nothing I can do about it. They're getting into all kinds of shady stuff or there are kinds of, you know, little things, schemes that they got to try and make their way through the corners and the cuts. But actually you were putting out something that's very different. Let's talk about that a little.
Yes. Exactly what you're saying. The whole day was like really, it was such a really beautiful day. And there is a report on the website revcom.us that people can go and read themselves and watch some of the videos. But basically from the beginning, we were practicing some of the marching, you know, together. It was really beautiful. There's some videos of that up on the website as well. And, you know, it did get people's attention, you know, that who are these people? you just kind of look at the how they were formed up. There was black, brown, white, old, young, you know, and, you know, all of them wearing the Revolution Nothing Less t-shirts and marching very disciplined and actually very serious, you know. And we began the march at Slauson and Crenshaw, where Nipsey Hussle was, the rapper, was actually shot down in front of the Marathon clothing store, which he owned, right? And he's very known in that neighborhood. And we've continued to meet people that actually knew him on a very personal level, right? That are still hurting from his death, right? And one of the things that we were you know, I gave a short rap on why we were there, right? And actually capturing the fact that, yes, it is Nipsey Hussle, but think about how many people, right, you meet all the time that just go through this all the time, where they grow up with their loved one, they get very close to, you know, their loved ones, right? And they have all these memories with them and they live their life with them. And all of a sudden they just get cut down, whether it is by the police or whether it is by, you know, somebody that looks just like them, right? And they have to continue to bury their loved ones over and over and over again. And some people just get numb to that, you know? They just end up accepting that because they think that there is no other way that we can be and that people are just too messed up and that we just have to accept it, you know? And I remember as I was giving the speech, I look over to where the clothing store is, where there's a memorial site there, and people usually come and hang out and take pictures with the store and with the mural, right? And all of their faces were turned to us, and they were listening, and they stopped what they were doing, and they were very focused on what we were talking about. And somebody else mentioned that while I was giving the speech, they saw somebody who began crying, you know, off of hearing that we don't have to accept this, that we don't have to live this way, and that was why we were out there that day, right? In those t-shirts representing a different future, and not just, again, a dream, but actually what we can be a part of bringing into being, right? Through an actual revolution, through defeating this system that puts so many people in that situation, whether it is in South Central, in Los Angeles, in Chicago, or in, you know, Syria, or people all over the world, you know? It is the same system that, you know, puts people in these situations, and we can actually do away with that, right? And that's what we were representing. And, you know, and right after I gave my speech, I actually, you know, called forward some people that right then and there put on the Revolution Latinas t-shirts, and they gave very moving speeches about why they had came forward and actually put on the shirt. And one of them in particular, the last one, talked about this point of hope, right? And actually turned to the people there in front of the Marathon clothing store and said, "I'm talking to you. Look at me. I'm talking to you," you know? And she started saying this thing about hope and how she knows that people's hope just gets sucked out of them, you know, all the time. And she said, you know, I felt that way. I've felt that way where the hope has been sucked out of me, but then I met these people, you know, and I can see that, you know, we can be a part of actually changing all of that. And that's why I put on this shirt, because I've had enough, right? I've had enough, and we need a revolution, and you need to do the same. You need to cross the street right now and come over here and put on this shirt. And off of that, two people ran across the street, you know, came to us with big smiles on their faces and grabbed the t-shirt. So that was very significant. That was just on Slauson and Crenshaw.
Did you have anything with that?
No, I think that captures it. I want to underline what she said. Go to revcom.us. Look at the videos. Look at the pictures. You'll get a sense. Look, something is being born. Something was born. When you have a new child, it's a great thing, and you're exhilarated and very happy. It's the first day of a lot of hard work, a lot of challenges, a lot of hopes, and a lot of valleys. But something was born, and if you don't see that when you go on the site and look at the pictures and listen to the words of the people who were interviewed, and see the response of the people on the sidelines, then you're missing something. There's something missing inside you, and you need to get it back. Let me just say that. This was the beginning of something. It was very meaningful, the ceremony she's talking about. These people, when they put on the shirts, are joining the Revolution Club. To join the Revolution Club, there's 6 points of attention that you have to uphold. Very simple points of attention that you can find on revcom.us, but that concentrate a whole different kind of world we could be living in. And those people putting on that shirt were representing for that and bringing four very different backgrounds, as it turned out. It wasn't planned that way. Four very different backgrounds to the corner of Slauson and Crenshaw, stepping off.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Lenny Wolf and Michelle Chai. And Lenny is an advocate for the new communism of Bob Avakian and from the Revolutionary Communist Party. And Michelle Chai is from the Revolution Club here in L.A. and around the world, I guess, too, huh? If you're going to be doing that, it's important. I wanted to actually ask another thing, too, though, because when you're saying this, you know, it's interesting because I watched as and I, you know, this is one of the first times in that I've been to a march where I've actually spent the time mainly on the sideline and you know, recording some things. But I watched, and some of the people that I spoke to, it was just, there was a difference in, you know, a lot of demonstrations you go to, you get some, you know, whatever, talk here and there. But I watched in particular as we went down to Florence and Normandy, as it arrived to Florence and Normandy. And the fact that what was concentrated in that place, you know, so many years ago that actually gave rise to the LA Rebellion. It also changed. It was a whole change between the way that people were interacting with the system and with the police and what was happening there, right? And it was, I mean, people standing up and you know, just saying, no, we're not going to live like this anymore. And I was reminded of that again when the march got down to the police station, you know, and it was very heavy there because you're looking and I know, I think a lot of people expected there'd be an army of cops and all this stuff, but it was so great when, you know, there was some police there and all this stuff, but it was so great that people put themselves in front of this place that has just done horrifying things to so many people over so many years. And people stood up there and with a lot of strength, a lot of certitude about what was going on and what needs to happen. And I watched as people came running out of their houses to get shirts, you know, they were going through a pile of shirts and trying to figure out which one fit, and they're putting it on, and the people were just dancing, you know. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit because I think it was one of those things that, you know, really showed what has been done to people, but also what happens when people actually can see a different path.
Well, I think we should, and I'm going to turn that over in a minute, but I just think maybe there might be something to mine from first talking about Florence and Normandy. And what the message, Slauson and Crenshaw, Michelle laid out, there was a very specific symbolic meaning to starting there. Then we went to Florence and Normandy, and then we went to the 7-7 and did something that we're going to talk about in a little while that was very controversial. But maybe we should, that's all, you know, I think we should get into the response and everything you're saying, but maybe in that, does that work?
That's actually what I was trying to say, so thank you.
All right, because we went from boom, boom.
Yeah, I know. Okay. But,
yeah. All right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that it just made me think about was like, when we took off from Slauson and Crenshaw, right, we had two flatbed trucks, one with a sound system and another one. We piled in a bunch of revolutionaries, you know, a bunch of people with the Revolution Nothing Less t-shirt, and they're traveling on a flatbed truck, right? And they're making beats and they're chanting, right? They're chanting Revolution Nothing Less. They're chanting, what's the problem? What's the solution? Revolution, right? And people are seeing this, right? People were traveling down Slauson in that neighborhood, right? And people are looking up. And they're smiling and they're dancing and they're chanting along and they're taking, you know, we had some people on the side just, you know, handing out the revolution paper, right? And you can see people's faces lighting up, you know, because as you said earlier, Michael, right, like you have in that those neighborhoods, right, that all you see all too much, right, who you see parading through those neighborhoods are those pigs. Right. With somebody in the back of their cop car handcuffed, you know, who you see parading in those neighborhoods, you know, are those pigs that are walking around harassing people, brutalizing people, right, murdering people. And, you know, and or who you see parading in those neighborhoods is the, you know, the caskets of the loved ones that they go and bury, right, all the time. That's what you see in those neighborhoods, right? And here you have something different, right? Who you saw parading in those neighborhoods that day was the revolutionaries that are actually bringing to people a way out, that we don't have to accept this, that we don't have to continue to just bury our loved ones, that we don't have to continue to just accept, right, the brutality, right, for people here and all over the world. And that had an effect on people. You know, people were joyous and people were happy to see that there is something, right? And then the fact that, you know, we weren't just showing people, saying hi and bye, but we were actually organizing them, you know? We actually were telling them that you, right? You who have been told all your life that you ain't worth anything, that you don't deserve anything in this life other than a bullet in your brain and a boot up your ass, that you can be a part of transforming all of this right now, that you can be a part of becoming, you know, one of these people in these Revolution Nothing Less t-shirts, right? And actually changing all of this, right? So I thought that was just really significant, and in seeing some of the people just coming out of, you know, their shops, their homes, right? People from their windows in their homes, right? And they're in the second story in their apartments, you know, putting their fists out and saying yes, you know? And then we arrived on Florence and Normandy, right? Which is the site where the 92 rebellion started, right? I was not born when that started, and I know some about it, but I will let Lenny talk more about that. But I do have to say that, you know, people there know about this, right? Mm-hmm. People know that this is where it started. People know that during the 92 rebellion, when this video came out, right, of Rodney King being brutalized, right? And people, if you watch that video, I recently watched it, and it was just heartbreaking, you know, seeing this person being, you know, hit over and over and over again, and he tries to get up, and they keep throwing him down and beating him over as if he was just, you know, a pile of trash or something, as if he was not a human being, you know, and then here's this video that comes out, right? And finally, you know, people see that, and people that have been brutalized by the police all the time, right? That finally we got you on tape, you know, we got you on tape for everybody to see that we ain't lying, that we ain't making this up, that you go around and you brutalize us all the time, right? And what happened? They said that the pigs did nothing wrong, that the pigs should be able to continue to do that to people all the time. And in fact, it's gotten worse, right? 25, 26 years later, right? It's gotten worse to the point where we just found out yesterday that the LAPD killed like 4 people in a day or something like that.
It was the sheriffs.
The sheriffs.
Yeah.
The sheriffs.
Same thing.
Same thing. Pigs killing people, right? Getting away with that. So,
yeah. Well, I just think, you know, first I was walking along the side, and it was really a sight to behold. And again, go watch the videos. But one great thing that we have to give a shout out to was the group Bruins for Revolution from UCLA that had their banner, had come out. One of the people put on the T-shirt and explained why it's Slauson and Crenshaw. And they represented very boldly and unapologetically all day long. And it was very good, and it was very welcomed. The club, the club and the tour has a chant. How do we get out of this mess? Revolution, nothing less. But they do the beats much better than I do. And it was very catchy. And at one point I'm walking down the street, and there's this group whose name I'm not going to call, but you could charitably say it's a mixture of narrow nationalism and mysticism with a lot of yelling. And they got about 12, 14 of their people out there, and one of their guys is raising his fist. He just can't help himself. He's going along with the chant because the revolutionary part of him, that's there. Okay, that is there. The aspirations that are there that have been misdirected by this particular group, we're being spoken to, we're being reached into. And in a microcosm, that was happening all over. The story she told, but other stories as well. This was speaking to people in a way that a leaflet, a talk on the corner, even three or four people on the corner doesn't equate to in quite the same way. You have to manifest. You have to, at certain points, take everybody who's come forward and impact on the situation and put this message out there in a way that really brings it home, as was done here. And we're at the corner of Florence and Normandy, and somebody who is watching on the sideline, who was a veteran of that rebellion, and this is not, let's just say we know that this a lot of times, look, people say, yeah, I was there, and that's coming from a good place, but sometimes it's not quite true. This was true. And he looked at this and he said, he saw the people in the street and he read the points of attention. He said, damn, this is something like Fred Hampton and the Panthers or something. And I feel he was right and he was wrong. And there, you know, I don't know if you're going to be able to play it, but you were saying you might play a speech from Joe Veal, who did talk about, and Joe Veal had been in the Black Panther Party, and he talked about, and he's talked about at length, the important contributions they made and how great that was. And there was a way where this was the very thing that people were responding to when they would see the Panthers out there was being responded to. Those very same chords were being struck. But this is something different at the same time in a much more profound way. And that has to do with the leadership we have. It has to do with Bob Avakian, the leadership he provides strategically, and most essentially, the new communism. But that was Joe's speech was very powerful and very reached inside people.
Yeah, I want to, can we play that clip? All right, it's number two. Okay, so let's play that. This is Joe Veal from the Revolutionary Communist Party. That was Joe Veal from the Revolutionary Communist Party. Let's talk about that a little. I think it'd be worth just hitting at some of the things, because it really did, you know, one of the things that was really evident to me was having been in a lot of walking in the streets, mm-hmm. demonstrations over the last 100 years, you know, what was different about this was the sense of purpose, the sense of understanding, and the outreach to people and the people and the really bringing people into things, but bringing them in on a basis that actually was rooted in, we need a revolution and nothing less than that. And this is the way to get there. And I thought that was really important for people to actually understand. And I think it's important for people here now to listen to, okay, well, why are we saying that? Is it just we just happen to like Bob Avakian, or he says some, you know, he's one of many people with a theory? But there's actually a need for actually people to understand what is so critically important about him and the work that he's done, and what difference does it make that it's in the world right now?
Well, look, I think, yes, if we could achieve the world that's talked about in the what ifs, or if we could even, that you played at the top of the show, or if you could stop any of these egregious abuses that we have in, that we call the five stops, the genocidal persecution, mass incarceration, police brutality, and murder of black and brown people, the patriarchal degradation, dehumanization, and subjugation of all women everywhere, and all oppression based on gender or sexual orientation, the wars of empire, which were just, seems like we're in the run-up to a new one, not to mention the ones that we're already in now that you're not being told about, armies of occupation and crimes against humanity, the demonization, the criminalization, and the deportation of immigrants, and the militarization of the border. How many more children are going to have to die on the border before people do something about this? And then the whole destruction that this system of capitalism, imperialism is wreaking on the planet. If you could stop those short of revolution, then it would be very irresponsible to undertake a revolution and self-destructive, frankly, to undertake a revolution with all the sacrifice it entails, all the destruction it entails. But you can't. And I want to urge people to go online, to listen to the film, to watch the film, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution, by Bob Avakian, a speech he gave last summer. I can't make the full case here, but just think, all these things people have worked. You talked about going back a long ways. I remember over 50 years ago, a big debate in the movement about reform versus revolution. And at a certain point, unfortunately, reform won. Well, what's happened? What's happened? You've got 8 times the amount of people in prison now, principally Black, Latino, Native American, and immigrants from mainly the Third World. You have 8 times as many people now as you had in 1970 when that reform was raging. You have school segregation worse today than it was then. You have women facing a situation which is not just going to go back to the days before Roe v. Wade, but it's going to be worse than the days before Roe v. Wade. Far worse. And you can do that. You can call the roll on every single one of these things. So this is the key thing. If there's a message to this tour, it boils down to this. Michelle said it last week, and I'll say it this week, quoting B.A., we have 2 choices, either live with all this and condemn future generations to the same or worse, if they have a future at all, or
make revolution.
Exactly. And that's the message. That's what, you know, we tell people the truth about their situation. We say what these, that we put it forward very clearly in the final analysis. All these other solutions that are being proffered to the situation we face are bull. I can't say that on the air. BS. Doesn't mean we don't work with people. Doesn't mean we don't unite with people who are not revolutionaries. Doesn't mean we don't join in struggles. We're right in the middle. We're sending Carl Dix, right as we speak, is headed to Memphis to be part of that struggle, but mainly to bring them the leadership of Bob Avakian and the revolution. Because without that, look, that's heroic what they're doing in Memphis. They're going up against the big pig force with, it's not a fair fight when you've got bricks and, bottles up against tear gas and bullets. But they're doing it, or they did it Thursday night, and we'll see where this goes. Anybody should defend masses of people defending themselves. But that's part of the lesson of the LA Rebellion of Florence and Normandy. Unless and until we make revolution the same thing. Do you want to be fighting this 50 years from now? I fought this 50 years ago. I want to ask the people in the audience. Do you or do you want your children to be fighting the same stuff 50 years from now? If we're even here to fight it. Because those are the stakes and those are the choices. And that's why this tour is so urgently, it's so urgent that people support it. It's urgent that you get with this. It's urgent that you follow it on social media. It's urgent that you financially enable these principally young people, although not only young people, to go around the country and spread this message, to be able to multiply, to begin to purchase ads and do the things we need to do to penetrate with this message. I know you need to do a break, Michael, so I'm going to, you know. But that's the deal, and that's what was out there. That's why people have come all over the country and slept on floors for 4 months out here in L.A., you know, and it's been great. People have supported this. People have donated food. People have done a lot, but this has got to be scaled up. That's the point. What happened on that day has got to be scaled up and pushed forward, and it's got to blossom. We need thousands in the next year, and it's not just we need thousands. Humanity needs a force for revolution emerging in this country. Humanity needs a force that's representing for the new communism that takes things to a different level, solves a lot of problems, and opens up a pathway to real emancipation, not just to surviving, but to, for, as you said at the top of the show, for humanity to thrive.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Lenny Wolf, who's from the Revolutionary Communist Party and an advocate for the new communism of Babavakian, and Michelle Chai, who is a member of the Revolution Club here in L.A. and around the world. There you go, because everywhere you go, you're going to stand with that. Now, you know, one of the things, which is a pretty damn good statement to have there, right? I wanted to ask, I might want to play something because it has, we have only 15 minutes, or less than 15 minutes, but there's a piece that I wanted to play that was from somebody who was really new at the demonstration, and the day after at the big meeting,
we had an organizing session, workshops.
Workshops, yeah. And who actually was, I mean, he was really digging into stuff. And I just wanted people to get a sense of, on the one hand, we had people like you guys and myself who were actually, you know, there from either you and I years, Michelle, from who wasn't alive in Florence and Normandy.
She's a young veteran. Right. Now.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's extremely important that does continue to happen, that people come forward like that. But and that's why I wanted to play something from this
Okay,
guy.
Before you do, though, could you let Michelle, because I just gave a rap for people to come in and support it. She's one of the leaders of the Revolution Club in L.A. She's going to just give her 1 minute to kind of let you know where you should go to be part of this, to get into this, and then definitely let's hear from the new.
That'll be fine. Go ahead.
Everybody, you know, as I'm not going to try to repeat what Lenny said, but just really important to, you know, the tour is going to span out, right? It's going to go move on to Chicago. What we began here in Los Angeles, right? We can't just let that just kind of people just return to their normal lives and let the world kind of work on them, right? And look, you don't have to do, you know, what a lot of us do, which is get up on a stage with a microphone, right? You can begin in very basic ways, which is, you know, one of the things that is going to be really important is following this tour as it continues to expand out, right? And support it in many different ways and lots of fundraising, right? That we're going to be doing. You can follow Tune Into RevCom on social media at Tune Into RevCom. And you should, if you haven't already, you should text Get Free to 55222.
All right. And we will announce that whole scene for next week, too.
Okay.
Anyway, one of the things that I wanted to do, and I was thinking about running this interview. Now, it's going to cut us really close to the end, I just want to actually do this. Let's go to this interview. Teddy, it's Well, Henry, you can get the one. Okay, it's number six. Okay, so go to that, and we'll run it as much as we can. What brought you here? I mean, it's interesting because I was listening to you speak, and you had, you know, some very well thought out things. What is it? What is it that got you? You showed up at the demonstration yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. What brought you there?
What brought me there was the fact that I always felt like there need to be a revolution, but I didn't know how to challenge that or channel it. I always felt like it was a part of me that felt it wasn't going to happen in my lifetime, or there wasn't anybody else that felt the same way I felt. And I met one of the Revolutionary Club members on SMC campus, and I was really profound because she was protesting and speaking, and there was no one listening to her. And I what drawn me to that was that the fact that there was no one listening. So I said, if there's no one listening, let me listen. After I started to listen and approach her segment, a lot of students started to come as well. And what opened my eyes was the fact that she was speaking truth that no one wouldn't understand on campus or wouldn't even try to investigate or research on. And I felt like it was necessary for me to be there and approach her. And that's where I got into it.
Well, tell me this, what brought you to that, you know, because you're sitting there and you're saying, like, there was this thing that was really heavily weighing on your mind.
What really brought me to it is the fact that I've been struggling myself personally for a very long time. I've been on my own since I was 12. And both my parents were deported in 1999 back to Jamaica. And I've been on my own ever since. So I always felt like as if what was the problem, or what was it that made them really got deported? Or I know it was, you know, things that were legal or had to do with the law, but for me as a child on my own, I felt like it was something that needed to be changed. And since I was 12, I always remember the people that took my parents away, the judge, the lawyers, the prosecutors, and I felt like something needed to be changed, and we need a revolution. Ever since I was 12 years old, I always felt that way. And I'm glad I found this club, because now I'm able to challenge the way I feel, to speak about the way I feel in a revolutionary way.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you were bringing up in the course of this whole session that you've been going through right now is you brought that up, and you said that there's actually, you know, on the one hand, you really, and I really want to hear this, like, on the one hand, you've talked about, you know, why you wanted to get into this. And then the thing you've also talked about, there's a hesitancy too, and how you've actually haven't allowed, what I'm really interested in is you haven't allowed that hesitancy to stop you from exploring and making a decision about what you think is needed.
Right. I am still kind of fearful. That's the hesitant that I was feeling, because in order for change to come, people are going to die. People are going to feel fearful, because there is no change without death. And that was the only thing that I felt was going to be my challenge, because in order to be a part of such a radical organization, death has to come. Harassment has to come from, you know, the oligarchs that hold our oppression. So I felt very fearful. But one thing that I said to myself, even though you're fearful of joining this organization, you have to approach it in order to understand your fear and understand why you're fearful to join such a radical organization. And every organization or every change, there are going to be fear. And that's the fear that I'm trying to overcome so I can feel comfortable in this organization.
Tell me this, because I hear what you're saying, but I also think it is clear that at a certain point you've made a decision that, you know, look, people get, they develop fear about a lot of things. And most of the time it's rational fear. But you're talking about how you can't let that determine what you do. And I wanted to ask you this, because, like, if you look at this, there was a real significance to what happened yesterday, to what happened on that march. What did you think about that?
I felt like it was needed. I felt like the people around the area that we were marching and protesting in had to see this. They had to see that we're not afraid for change. And deep down, I am not afraid for change, but there's still a little fear there. But I have to express myself in a way that people could see that you have to overcome your fear in order for you to have, you know, change in society. I sucked up my fear that night, that yesterday, because the area that we were in, many people feel the same way I felt. They have to see my face. They have to see what we're about. They have to see us protesting. They have to see us, you know, with the flags that we did at the priest, at the 76th precinct. They have to see that in order for people to overcome their fear and, you know, make a mark on revolution. They had to do that.
Well, explain to me this, and explain to people that are listening. You mentioned this point about the flags and the need for people to see the flags at the 77th precinct. Tell people what happened and why you think it was so important.
The flag was something that I never thought that was going to happen, because I just joined actually yesterday. It was something really, really radical. And people have to see that this flag, it represents so many obstacles in our lives. And people always bring up the military as if the military is this shining armor that protects us. But it's actually not protecting us. It's actually making us more oppressed. When people, you know, kneel or protest the flag, they bring up the military. People have to understand that there's another way. It's not all about the military or the American flag and what it represents. What it represents to me is oppression, slavery, and it contradicts everything that people in, you know, the status quo of mainstream society feel as if it's this shining armor, which is not. And the people had to see the burning of the flag for them to burn their fear and overcome these obstacles that we're facing today.
What I really want to ask you actually too is, you know, you're talking about the kind of world you lived in, that you live in, that we all live in now. What's the kind of world that you'd like to live in? And what does it have to do with what you're walking into now, what you're taking up now?
The world that I see that we can all live in is a world where we're all free. We all have the same equity and not just equality. We all have to start on the same page and start over. Right, rewrite our history in a way where everyone is appreciated and everyone contributed, because we all contribute to this history, but it's only one side that's always being told. I walked into this organization knowing that there is more to history and knowing that there is have to be a rewrite of history. And that's the reason why I'm a part of it, because revolutionary is not only just overthrowing, it's becoming new. It's like, it's almost as if it's a renaissance and a rebirth. And that's the reason why I'm here, because we have to have a rebirth. We have to have a renaissance. We have to have a revolution.
All right. That was an interview I did with somebody at the day after event, following the, I'm sorry, I just got all discombobulated. At any rate, I wanted to ask you guys, because we only have about 4 more minutes, I wanted to ask you, you listened closely to what this person was saying, and he went on to talk about how, what really made him come into this. And I'd like you to just comment on that, because it's something that I think it seems like there's a lot of people out there that could be very, very much like this person. And who was actually, I have to say, when he mentioned the thing about the what happened at the precinct, he was ecstatic about the actual ability and the bravery of people and the ability of people to actually come together and stand up again in the face of this, you know, the massive repressive machinery of the state. And, you know, I thought it weighed a lot on him. And that's why part of the reason he came to the event the next day, where people were discussing all this and what way to go forward. And I wanted to just hear what you thought about some of what he had to say, either one of you.
Well, I have to say, I mean, for one, is that was a really heavy story, like what he's describing, right, about his parents having been deported, right? But I just have to say, like, it's heartbreaking. The fact that it's not a unique story. The fact that you meet so many people that go through this all the time, right? And just like he said, begin to question, why did it happen, you know? And in particular, a lot of people end up questioning, why did it happen to me, right? Without actually looking at the fact that this happens to so many people all over the world, right? And not just in a form of deportation, but in the form of, and if you're in a third world country and you can't even survive and your parents gotta, you know, sacrifice leaving you behind or something, being separated from you because they wanna go and find a way for you to be able to survive, you know? And so my point is, this happens to so many people, right? And, you know, and the fact that through all that, you find a force, right, that's actually putting forward revolution and that's actually putting forward a way out. And the point that he spoke to about fear, right, that there actually is, you know, when you're talking about we're talking about doing something incredibly big, right? We're talking about making a revolution. But then when you do begin to see the people that are coming forward in the face of all of that, in the face of in front of the 77th Police Department, burning an American flag and declaring that we are getting organized to overthrow their system, right? It does give hope to some people, and it does give people a sense of we can actually do this. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do want to say just a few things. I think what Michelle said really captures quite a bit, but I do feel that the greatest thing to fear, maybe 3 points, the greatest thing to fear is that there is no change, that we go 50 more years if we go at all. These are the stakes. And I feel that there's millions of people holding back right now. Oppressors count on fear. I do want to give a shout out to Brother Jabari at the Ephebus Center, who's opened his center to our film. And he made the point in welcoming us that when you stand up against the oppressor, when you look them in the eye and confront that fear, you've taken that first step. At the same time, I also want to say this very quickly. The revolution is a serious revolution. We do not take lightly sacrifices. This is a human revolution. And we are going to, there will be sacrifice. We fight every attack on us as hard, and on the masses who come forward as hard as we can. We will not let this turn us around. We will not let them make us into them.
Exactly. Very important point. We never are going to let them make us into them.
I want to thank everybody that listened to the show, everybody that took part in the show today, and each and every one of you. And actually, we're listening now to
99 Revolutions you're listening to. Hit the lights and bang the drum and let your flag unfold. 'Cause history